Services in place that people need to get them off the streets. I think that to a certain extent is putting the cart before the horse to say that you can't sleep before you provide an alternative. Provide an alternative. Provide a way for people who are on the street to get out of that lifestyle. And then I think things like sleeping bans and curfews and the like unnecessary. I'm not interested in band-aid solutions. And sleeping ban, while I think very well intentioned and maybe effective to a certain extent, is a band-aid solution. What I'm interested in are alternatives that solve the problem. And the alternatives that are going to solve the problems caused by homelessness, be it downtown, on the river, around apartment blocks, etc., what's going to really fix the problem is providing a way out for the people that are homeless. Contrary to popular belief, most of the homeless are there alone. Most of the homeless are there because of substance abuse problems, mental illness, hardship circumstances, etc. We need to provide number one, beds. Number two, programs for them to get off their feet. This is not the sort of thinking, by the way, that will attract other homeless people from around the state. Because to provide this relief, there are strings attached. It requires qualification. It requires participation in both rehab, drug rehab, job training. It's not something where people can come into town, enjoy these services, and go on a lot. There are definite strings attached. If you want to avail yourself of services, you should be required to participate in programs that can get you back on your feet. Now, that's 80% of the people. There are maybe 20%, and this is from speaking with various people who deal with homeless issues in the downtown. 20% of kids who are basically on a lark, they're downtown. And as for them, again, I'm not interested in a band-aid sort of approach which is simply going to move them from one place to another. That doesn't work. That's irresponsible. What's a real solution? Well, one would be outreach. Outreach, perhaps backed by the firmer hand of the police. To get these kids into counseling, into programs to repatriate them into the mainstream, and to show them a way out, because I'll bet you dimes and donuts that they are looking for that way out. So, I'm not interested in quick fixes, because quick fixes are the reason why we're still dealing with homeless issues downtown after what, 25 years? And after these issues of sleeping bans and city debt, it's still there, folks. So let's come up with a real solution and not just a band-aid.
And that was Keith Sugar at the Downtown Association Forum. I actually took Keith to task for this answer, which you can read about in the street shit sheet when you pick up a copy, number 159. It sounds good, and I agree with his answer in many respects, but he doesn't really answer the question, which is, are you interested in making changes in the sleeping ban law or in the camping ban law, which the sleeping ban is a part? He says he doesn't believe in sleeping bans. He says he favors more beds. He says this, he says that. He makes some other uncomfortable-sounding statements about unleashing the police on 20% of those kids who are on a lark. I suppose by that he means people in taking alternative lifestyles, dismissing an entire culture as a lark. I find that to be very offensive and rather ominous. But setting that aside, again, there's no real answer to the question. Whereas in his first forum, he said, let's end the sleeping ban. He said that in the scan forum clearly. You don't hear him say that here. Now, maybe it goes without saying, and maybe he'll act on it anyway, and that was what he sort of told me. He said he would not initiate a change in this ban, but he would vote for it. I don't know why he wouldn't initiate it. He's the lawyer on the group. He's the man who can, you know, presumably has read the sleeping ban initiative, which took a dozen or more people 4 months to put together. And is a very mild change in the law that essentially allows people to sleep somewhere legally without providing, you know, soft pillows and hundreds of thousands of dollars in services. All it does, it simply says it's a basic right. Anyway, let's hear more of the forum. and more of the answers from some of the other candidates. Listening now to Tim Fitzmaurice, another one of the three progressives that I encourage you to vote for, by the way, even though I am not liking a lot of what they're saying in the last couple weeks. Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar. This is Fitzmaurice.
And of course, at the university, I mean, many people have had these problems for working in local high schools. And since my son went to school there, and since I've been involved with youth activities over the years, I know that these things happen. And I've been tolerant of drug use, and I try to deliver that message to my own students, because I don't think it's a dysfunctional one. Personally, I think that I do a good job delivering that message. I think it requires leadership. It requires leadership that's willing to talk to people and say what works in their life. And what could work in the lives of the youth. I'm really concerned with anything that criminalizes the young kids in the city. I'm very concerned about this. We have to be really careful about how we address an issue like this, because these are our children. You know, I've seen ordinances come through that are meant to control activities of young people. I've seen, the way that young people are, in a sense, I've talked to a lot of young people recently, and they said sometimes it's hard for a kid that goes up to Santa Cruz to, get through without a record of some sort, that they're hanging out in the wrong place, or they're riding skateboard in the wrong place, or they're doing something. There's a lot of ways to get caught, and that's a great concern for a lot of young people, and I certainly agree with Rod's point that the answer, to some extent, is that we need to take a more direct and a stronger leadership role in talking to young people and making change in their life. And I think we can do that. But I think if you look at the services in our community, for instance, you'll see that they're not related toward youth. The kinds of things that we contribute to, the kinds of things that come out of the general fund are not directed toward that community at all, that group of people at all. And we need to do something to make better contact with them. And I do believe there's a problem. And I do believe we have to be assertive about the problem. And I want to do everything I can to avoid criminalizing them. Also want to highlight, and since the little red flag didn't go up, that I've been in a lot of traffic commissions for a long time. Oh, you can do it now, too. And there are ways to control traffic, and I'm very interested in neighborhood traffic management programs, for instance. I think neighborhoods need to plan their own traffic problems, plan their own solutions, things that the people in the area will buy into and will make change. And I think the downtown neighborhood, since I live in it, is no different than any other neighborhood in how to come together and plan solutions, because this neighborhood is going to see more and more congestion and needs to work on that in the next 5 years. Thanks.
And this is a question about the, quote, camping ban. Again, the dialogue is being corrupted by talking about the camping ban instead of the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban. Since it's easy to say, I support the camping ban, but not talk about criminalizing sleep. This question is addressed to Jane Walton, who I call Whoops-a-Daisy Walton in the street shit sheet. She gives her response to whether people should be arrested for sleeping at night by essentially, of course, not addressing it by talking about the camping ban, although she does, in fact, address it by indirection.
I do support the camping ordinance as written. One, I believe that the changes that are being put forth by those who would change the ordinance are a technique that's being used in another realm of the law, to wit, the pro-life, pro-choice realm, in which little changes are made to the laws and pretty soon the underlying principle has been eroded. not see how allowing folks to camp everywhere in Santa Cruz or even the downtown core and the industrial areas is an asset to our community. I am a runner. I ran Riverbank behind San Lorenzo recently. I was absolutely appalled by the amount of trash that was left in obvious campsites. If the folks who are camping can police themselves, maybe we can talk about this again in a few years. I do want to mention, since the red flag isn't waving, that I failed to mention that the concept of the busway is that the buses can get off the dead
And here is Linda Steinau, the Downtown Duchess and Chamber of Commerce candidate, as well as sort of the comrade-in-arms of Karen Gillette, who is really the most likely to win the council seat, in my opinion, the conservative two-beat, talking about so-called drug problem downtown. She is, of course, referring to the alcohol and tobacco problem, which is killing 100 to 500 times more people than the other, quote, drug problem, but let that be.
There was kind of a joke when he said, so we could say, you know, we could get it all downtown, but that wasn't what we were talking about. I think that the drop-in center being right on Front Street is not a place that I would choose to have it. I know no neighborhood wants necessarily to have a drop-in center in their neighborhood, but I don't think it's a good place downtown. I think it needs to be moved closer to, say, the MI center, where the services are provided. I'm a strong supporter of police. I saw as we continue to increase the police patrol downtown, the problems got better. I would do everything I could to get the police up to their standards. They are very, for years, have been under-personed. And I would like to be able to fund them fully so all neighborhoods could experience the proper benefit that the downtown has received from having increased police patrol. I think we as a community need to educate ourselves. I think we are. We do allow the thought of drugs. I think that some of the downtown association members who've been speaking up very strongly are very much on the right path. We need to talk among ourselves and say this is not acceptable. I think a lot of our community does accept drugs, so we need to change that mentality. Again, like Tim, I don't want to criminalize anyone, but I don't think that it's proper behavior, particularly in the downtown core. I would do everything I can to assist the police and assist the business owners to eliminate it as much as possible. I think we all know we're not going to eliminate it. We can kind of move around a little bit. But I think education, increasing the police force as much as possible, and just getting the message out that it is not acceptable. You know, we want to be a free zone, and I think the downtown has declared itself a drug free zone. Just as much as possible, keep putting the word out that it's not acceptable.
Okay, and we have on the line with us, in the final few minutes of the show, David Silva. David, you've been listening to Linda Steinau on drugs, and by the way, in a later cut, she also says she favors moving the drop-in center out of downtown. She's very firmly concerned about the drop-in center. Any comments on any of this?
Well, to move the drop-in center from out of downtown is to not understand the concept of the drop-in center. And her reasons for moving it also says that she does not believe in the drop-in center. To say to move the drop-in center to the MLN complex is, you know, the staff is already there. They don't need an extension in the next room. The outreach is for the people around the Metro Center, the homeless community, the youth community, and it's effective. The repression that's been felt by certain city police officers, influenced by this, I guess the Downtown Association actually controls some police officers. They're not even answerable to the chief of police. That seems to be the impression when they're attacking the needle exchange program, the downtown and the drop-in center. I think they're making a very big mistake. She talks about education and fighting the war on drugs. Well, what do you think the drop-in center is?
You know, it's
what does she think the drop-in center is? So she,
let me interrupt you for a minute, Dave, because your comment that the police seem to be answerable to the Downtown Association and not to the city council or say to the chief of police is interesting, because when I talked to one of the local sergeants downtown, he told me that not merely has Sergeant McMahon been running around censoring drop-in literature on, you know, fuck-safe, shoot-safe stuff, intended
important
to...
Important information.
Right. But not only that, David, but this officer has also been behind enforcement of banishment orders from the downtown.
Right.
Which has apparently become the practice since January of this year. But go ahead.
It seems to be an issue that, the progressive slate does not willing to take up. The fact that, you know, we don't run our own police force. SCAN was willing to take it up this past January. In its newsletter, and so we, you know, the progressive community is aware that we do not control our own police force, and that is a disgrace in any American city. But I would like to also say that, you know, Linda Steinau's change of position since last week, early last week, when she spoke to me, being willing to take out references to sleeping as camping, that was the context of our conversation, the context of changing language in the camping ordinance. It was within only that context. So for her to come back later and say, well, I was just talking about changing some language, not any language that had any meaning, was not the conversation she was having with me, so she is lying. So the Downtown Association and the Sentinel and those people that support her should know that she was lying to me, and she may be lying to them. I don't think that conservatives, moderates, wherever you fall on the spectrum in this city, and this is a strange spectrum in the city, that you should trust someone that lies from one forum to another. And the same thing has happened with Jane Walton. She's done a flip-flop. And, of course, her reasons are more contemptible than Linda Steinau's. At least Linda Steinau's are pure political. Jane Walton's are contemptible reasons.
Why would you say that?
Well, because she says that just because she saw some bad behavior amongst three homeless persons one morning when she was jogging, she thinks that, you know, she now no longer agrees with looking at the sleeping ban. That's like saying that, you know, I understand that some livers are bad because people drink. Therefore, let's outlaw all liver transplants in the United States. I mean, that's that kind of logic. It's deplorable. Mm-hmm. The bad logic, bad compassion, bad politics, bad woman, get out of town. You know, don't run for office in our town. You know, Jane Walton is a failed DA with a failed agenda, and the Sentinel and the Downtown Association should be ashamed for having an incompetent person like that running for them. And as far as competence goes also, I think that maybe the only thing that Linda Steinau is competent in doing is rallying jackboot-type activities and repressive-type activities. And despite Linda Steinau, the downtown was developed. The money came in, and there was growth. Despite her cleaning out of the type of culture and what attracted people, or what attracted tourists to this town, despite her activities, we had some growth in this town, and we would have had a much nicer, more pleasant town for everybody, disabled people and homeless people and young people, as well as the tourists that aren't aware of politics, machinations, and the evil kind of doings that she was about when she was the head of the Downtown Association.
Well, you know, I can't agree with you more, of course. I mean, I have a hard time. I like Jane personally, and Linda and I have never had any cat fights in the street, but, you know, the fact of the matter is I've been...
It's right-wing populism, yeah. Robert. Let's call it what it is. It's right-wing populism. And we have no place for that in this town. What we need to do is we need to repeal the sleeping ban. Now, if these three progressives, when they're elected, whoever which one takes the move to do it first, and who knows, it might even be Mike Rodkin or Kevin Byers, if we haven't done the negotiations before they come to office, that's fine. But what we need to tell people is that the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban is still alive. We still need possibly to go back out on the street and carry petitions. We still need to communicate with everybody that signed the initiative to let them know what's happened and where we're at. We've been in limbo for a whole summer without any money. So you do need to send your contributions, and if there's like just seven people out there that could send $75, we'd be able to communicate with every single person that signed that petition. That's Post Office Box 1735 in Santa Cruz, 95061. Remember, the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban is still alive. We're a pretty loose coalition of many, many organizations, and we need just seven angels out there to send $75, and all the rest of you send in $5. That's Post Office Box 1735, Santa Cruz 95061.
Wow.
We will repeal the sleeping ban.
That was a mouthful, David.
Yes.
And if you want to get that address again, give a call to David Silva at
429-5284.
I'd ask you for more.
Be specific that you're talking about repealing the sleeping ban. I'm using the phone for a lot of others.
You have a 17 hats there, Silva.
Yes.
Look, I want to thank you for your update. I'd ask you more, but I'm coming into the last 30 seconds of my show with
well, you know, we
a much
can,
better
we
show coming up right after.
the most disgusting kind of performance of all the candidates we should have expected to come to the Downtown Association. Like someone very wise that's been in the homeless community, who maybe you don't particularly like, said recently, you know, the 95-90% of the times in the Downtown Association doesn't get its way anyway. So let's put the thing in perspective, okay?
All right, and I also invite you to show up at the UCSC Student Forum at 8 o'clock on Thursday at Kresge College. That's going to be the next candidate forum that I'm aware of, unless there's one sooner that you may know of.
No, I am not aware of any candidate forum. All I'm aware of is I have to be at the Green Party meeting at 5 o'clock at UCSC. Everybody be there.
I'll let you go.
Center. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, David.
That was David Silva, and that has been Bathrob Spears Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz. We're going out on a little music from The Secret Garden. Please tune in Thursday at 6 o'clock when I will return with the continuation of the DTA Forum and the frightening positions on the sleeping ban taken by progressives and non-progressives alike. If our next talk show host, what are you calling yourself, talk show host? The Little Red Hen Hour is going to come clucking your way soon. So get all the kids around the radio. This is a show for everybody, moms, dads, kids, the young at heart alike. Join the Little Red Hen. And here's a little opening from the Secret Garden, so perhaps we can mix civil rights and hennishness and get it all together. Thanks for being with us. Come on back Thursday at 6.
all peoples.
World domination through divine right, leading to the end of the world as we know it. Soon after writing the apocalyptic prophecies, Cologne embarked on his fourth and final voyage. During the journey, Cologne imagined a voice from heaven coming to congratulate him one night as he lay
with a high fever and very fatigued.
Cologne truly believed he was graced by the hand of God, divinely inspired. He began signing his name, Son of God.
Trevor, vicious man. Must you go on and on? The man was sick. He was coming apart, losing his mind in illness.
So much pain.
And bleeding from his eyes on August 4th.
Fatigue without parallel.
He cursed his eyes and said,
may it please our Lord to free me from them.
Columbus was a deeply religious man. He was ill. Most historians have the decency to respect the privacy of this illness. Let the man rest for the love of God.
I am wholly ruined, as I have said. Hitherto I have wept for others. Now may heaven have pity on me. May earth weep for me.
He was a broken man, unrecognized for his achievements, ravaged by illness.
Alone in my trouble, infirm, daily expecting death, surrounded by a million savages full of cruelty, and thus deprived of the holy sacraments of Holy Church. How forgotten will be this soul if here it part from this body. Weep for me, whoever has charity, truth, and justice.
Bill, it shifts to you.
Cologne was not the only victim. Las Casas, please.
Wherefore many Taino went to the woods and there hung themselves after having killed their children, saying it was better to die than to live so miserably. The women, with the juice of a certain herb, dissipated their pregnancies in order not to produce children, and then, following the example of their husbands, hung themselves. Some threw themselves from high cliffs down precipices. Others starved themselves to death. Out of the 2 million of original inhabitants, through the number of suicides and other deaths imposed by the Spaniards, there are not a 150 now to be found.
The Harvard study team said in May 1991 that the situation in post-war Iraq was a public health catastrophe and predicted that at least 170,000 children under the age of 5 would die within a year.
According to the faith of God's elect and the acknowledgement of the truth.
Gentlemen!
Closure of power plants that provide one-fifth of our state's electricity, and that means higher prices.
Put the brakes on Proposition 9.
And every...
on 9. KBOQ, 95 FM.
Despite all your grand posturing, you've convinced very few. Learning...
reminded, just holding self-control. Holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able both by sound doctrine...
Late edition of Battle of Spears Broadsides. Civil Rights for the Poor here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Stay tuned for 2 hours of civil rights, interviews, weird music, and exciting pitter-patter of all kinds. Hang with us on 96.3 FM, and we'll hang with you.
John Randall, the King and I, and the catcher in the right, Eisenhower vaccine, England's got a new queen, Marciano Liberace, Santayana, goodbye.
We didn't start the fire, it was all we thought, since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire, though we didn't light it, but the tribal lions.
Joseph Stalin, Alan Carr, Nasser and Prokofiev, Rockefeller, Campanella, communist rock. Roy Khan, Walter Ron, Pasquinini, Dan Kwan, Gin, Gin, Foo Falls, rock around the clock.
little late this afternoon. There's been a lot of hoopla around the station. The power went out for a while. We were not rated by the FCC. Or rather, PG&E pulled a fast one. They didn't send us the appropriate notice, and we just had to dash down and pay that bill. My apologies for any inconvenience that happened on that one. The show tonight is going to be half me live, playing various selections, interviewing various people, mostly on tape, and then you're going to hear a taped selection, hopefully. We didn't quite make our schedule in terms of getting the tape done beforehand, because there's a campus forum at 8 o'clock I recommend that all of us go to. It's the candidates forum for city council, perhaps the last one of the season before the November 3rd vote. Perhaps there's another one I haven't heard about, and I welcome anybody to call in and educate me on that issue. But this is certainly an important one. It's a forum in front of students, the same students who will be growing up and casting votes, hopefully, for people like Gloria LaRiva, who was going to be interviewed this afternoon. In fact, was being interviewed, I believe, by Free Radio Santa Cruz programmer Steve Argul. But unfortunately, she suffered the same power failure that we had here. Lots of interesting stuff and not much time to present it. We've had an interesting forum on the issue of the Homeless Community Resource Center trying to think of how we could best bring to the candidates what they're not being told by the povertycrats, the social service workers, the people who are already on the city and county payrolls, but who aren't really homeless advocates and activists, but who simply want to kind of keep their own programs going and keep things heading in a certain direction. Why mince words? I'm referring to people like Karen Gillette, head of the Homeless Community Resource Center, who's featured in a story in the Mid-County Post. For all of you who are interested in that sort of thing, you can pick one of those free bi-weeklies up at most small restaurants and coffee shops. The Mid-County Post has her picture on the cover. The story is called The Advocate, and I'm not quite sure whether we're talking about an advocate for Linda Steinau, the Downtown Association's candidate who wants to sink the progressive slate. This is the person that Gillette does endorse in this race. She's a fan of Linda Steinau's, and naturally, because Steinau is on her board of directors at the Homeless Community Resource Center. So it's an interesting situation with her and with the election. I hope you all get up to campus at 8 o'clock. It's at Kresge College, UCSC, to check out this forum if you can get up there. If you can't, I'm hopefully going to be broadcasting some snippets of it on the Sunday Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show. We do a show both Thursday at 6 o'clock and again on Sunday at 1 o'clock, I'm sorry, at 11 o'clock in the morning, and then we go until 1:30 in the afternoon. We do have a call-in number here, and we do take calls in the studio. I hope our phone is working. I suspect it is. I don't think the phone bill is overdue. The call-in number is 427-3772, and if you disagree with or think I'm not saying all of what should be said about or am not addressing the right subjects here on the air, please do give me a call. I'd be happy to talk to you on the air and have the, more important, have the rest of the community hear what you have to say. 427-3772. Urge you to direct yourself to the issues of the candidates, the city council candidates, because these next 2 weeks or next week and a half will be the final period of time during which we can actually at least pretend we have a choice on these issues. And again, the number to contact is 427-3772. Give me a call. Phone lines are open, and I have my eye on the phone flasher, so I will immediately put you on the air if you call in. We don't have waiting periods of time. You can say whatever you want. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. We put you directly in contact with the community. I like to read kind of dates, famous people and famous dates. You hear about George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, all the famous stale and pale white males, as the saying goes. But you don't hear about some of the other folks. For example, I don't know how many people have heard about her. I've heard her name before, and I know a little bit about her. I haven't studied too much about her, but there was a birthday for Margaret Sanger on the 21st. She was born on the... actually, it wasn't her birthday, I'm sorry, but She was actually born September 14th, 1883, and she died in 1966. Quite a long life. She's worth remembering. No woman can call herself free who does not own and control her body. Coined the term birth control, she's a European-American pioneer of reproductive rights movement in the U.S. In 1916, she opened the first birth control clinic in the U.S. in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn. In 1953, Margaret Sanger became the first president of the International Planned Parenthood Federation. As a nurse in the slums of New York City, she saw the intensification of poverty, high rates of infant and maternal mortality, and from uncontrolled fertility. She fought to repeal laws that forbade discrimination of dissemination of contraception information, and often she was arrested and indicted for disseminating birth control information. The police raided her birth control clinics. Margaret also brought the birth control movement to India and Japan in the 1950s. Another woman we might want to remember is Molly Brandt. She was a Mohawk political leader who supported the British against the American colonialists during the Revolutionary War. She secretly aided her brother Joseph Brandt's Iroquois forces against the Americans in the Mohawk Valley. She informed on American troop movements, sent ammunition, fed and assisted those who had taken refuge in the woods. She was forced by the Americans to leave her home. She moved further west. She used her considerable influence among the Six Nations to keep Cayugas and Senecas on the British side. Now, it's not that I have any particular drum to bang for the British, but I think that people who fought for the independence of their peoples should be remembered, and so I mentioned Molly Brandt, Mohawk political leader. Angela Grimke. Here's a woman who was born February 20th, 1805, and died October 26th, 1879. That's coming up in a few days, October 26th. She was a European-American suffragette abolitionist. She was the sister to Sarah Grimke, born to an aristocratic slaveholding Southern family. Both sisters came to abhor slavery at an early age. When their father died, they convinced their mother to deed them the slaves, whom they promptly set free. Both sisters did much to join the abolitionist and suffragette movements in the U.S. They also greatly influenced and aided the education of their black niece, Angelica Weld Grimke, a Harlem Renaissance writer. Not mentioned is that these two lived in the South. And to live in the South and be abolitionists, even in the 1820s and 1830s, was quite a feat. There was essentially a totalitarian society established down there in the South. And if you were against slavery, you were lucky to keep your scalp, whether you were white or black, particularly if you were black. These two, however, were white. Just a few names to throw out, and of course now we come across Karen Gillette, the advocate. It seems amusing to me to have to mention her in the same breath as I do these other women who actually took real risks, who stood up to the risk of sometimes of their lives, certainly of their liberty in the case of Margaret Sanger. And the reason I guess I even mention her in this situation is because she's getting publicity here in the Mid-County Post. She's the most powerful person in the homeless community services field, and she's also probably one of the most untouchable people. And it's really important to understand, if we want to understand what's going on there and what's needed, we have to understand why her analysis of events is flawed and be able to look at the conduct of the services that she presides over, the Homeless Community Resource Center, the Community House, and the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, with an objective eye, or even better than that, an advocate's eye, someone who really has a concern for the people that are supposedly the recipient of these services. And in a way, instead of any advocates or pictures of smiling bureaucrats, they shouldn't be on the cover of newspapers and magazines. It should be the people that these services are paid to serve. I mean, that's really what it's all about, providing services to people who need them, making sure that people's rights are secured when we find, of course, institutionally here in Santa Cruz, due to such things as the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night anywhere outside or in a vehicle, with the exception of church parking lots, 3 to a parking lot, and good luck if you can find such a lot.
we need to really look the situation over clearly and give clear testimony to the city council candidates who, if three of them win, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, they can change the direction of the next city council. They are backpedaling on issues like rights for homeless people, but they can be approached, and I believe they can be educated if enough of us contact them. And I'm in the next hour, when I'm running off to the university and the show is recorded, hopefully at least some of it, you'll be able to hear the phone numbers of these candidates, and perhaps I can even get my program director, my producer, to get those phone numbers to the studio here so we can pass them on to you now. So if you want to give a call to these three candidates, you can. They, of course, probably won't be home now, but you can leave them a message and tell them you want to know not just how they stand, but you want to advise them as to how you think they should stand and give them the benefit of your experience. If you've been on the streets, if you've been struggling to make a living in this town, to survive in this town, let them know that there's a need to have a 24-hour restroom. There's a need to eliminate a law that criminalizes sleeping and covering up with blankets. So there's a need for a campground, even if Karen Gillette doesn't like the campground, and the current political superstition and prejudice is to badmouth to death the Coral Street open-air shelter that really saved many, many lives. And as after it was closed, lots of people died. Homeless people died and that I think would not have died had they had a place to be together, to help each other, and to access services, as they did at that campground. Of course, it didn't help Karen Gillette's reputation among the downtown merchants, who are one of her principal sources of funding. It didn't help her reputation with the county povertycrats, who last thing they want is to provide emergency services for people. That's the cheapest form of service, is to provide a campground, much more productive for them as far as jobs go for middle-class social service workers, is to play this game that, oh, homeless people are somehow crippled people, that they need some sort of extensive social service rehabilitation program, that they're drug addicts, they're junkies, they're bums, they're crazies, they've got mental health problems. Not that any of this doesn't have an element of truth to it, but the primary truth is that people do not have adequate services. They don't have places they can stay. They don't have places they can be. They don't have jobs that are available and accessible. You're in a throwaway society at the present time. And this is something that is being denied, and instead homeless people are being blamed. And I believe that insofar as Karen Gillette and Linda Steinau, her candidate for city council, play into this, we have a very bad situation. Insofar as these other candidates hear from you that kind of advice, that it's the homeless people's fault that they're homeless, that all we need to do is you know, let's cut back on those services, or let's put them in a position where let's keep the sleeping ban. We've never heard from Karen Gillette statements opposing the ban that makes it illegal to sleep at night. As long as we keep these crazy laws, somehow that's a good thing. No, that's the voice of the Downtown Association speaking, and it's speaking through the really twisted form of so-called homeless service providers like Karen Gillette. It is in fact interesting that it is advocates and protests that set up the services like the free meal, like the Homeless Community Resource Center, like expanded interface satellite shelter program services. All those things that she now presides over were produced by protest, by people like myself and Jane Emler and Linda Edwards and Linda Lemaster, by people like Kim Argula and Robert Flory, Dave Jacobs, by people who stood out and took a lot of heat from the same merchants and from conservative bigots and politicians, from bankers like Quattraro, from wingnuts like Walton, and I'm afraid I have to use that, I use that advisedly, because I call her Whoops-a-Daisy Walton, because she can't seem to get a grip on the idea that it should be legal for people to sleep somewhere at night. Instead, she's all over the map on that issue. And for me, it's a touchstone issue. I guess her suggestion, her most recent suggestion, was that people leave town. Well, I don't want to say it, but, you know, maybe she should take her own advice. I don't know. Again, if you want to call the candidates, that's Keith Sugar at 462-2053. Tim Fitzmaurice at 423-1167, and Chris Crown at 423-1066. Again, grab your pencils and papers. I'll write down these numbers. These are the candidates that might actually make a difference, and they need to hear from you about your experience with homelessness. Keith Sugar, 462-2053. If you don't get him tonight, call him tomorrow. Tim Fitzmaurice, 423-1167, 423-1167. Chris Crone, 423-1066, 423-1066. Really encourage you to do that, to call these candidates. Interesting paper yesterday in Metro Santa Cruz, for those of you who picked it up. There were a couple of nasty letters attacking the progressives. I'm no big fan of the progressives most of the time, but the recent arrogance of the Rotkin-Matthews Council in trying to ram down Santa Cruz's throat the Charlie Canfield sellout deal has been so overt and so obvious that it really began to turn everybody's stomach. The papers are telling us that the whole deal has now been changed, that there's a compromise, that this issue has been removed. This, of course, is not true. For those of you who've been following my show and been listening to Phil Baer, a Beach Flats activist who's called in on different occasions and spoken to us on the issue or attended city council meetings, perhaps listened to my speeches there. If you agree with me, you'll understand.